What if I told you the same thing keeping you up all night could be the thing that's pushing you forward? See, our fears and our dreams, they're not that far apart as they seem. Today's conversation about facing both head on, next on the podcast. Let's do this.
Welcome to the No Sitting on the Sideline Dad podcast, a podcast about a journey of discovery and conversations about not sitting on the sideline of life. Let's get involved. Here's host Joe Foley.
Hey there. I just want to say thank you for hitting play today. And welcome to the No Sitting on the Sideline Dad podcast. I'm Joe Foley. And the first time here, I'm really glad you found this podcast. It really means a lot. And just me and you sitting down, talking about the real stuff, fatherhood, parenting, personal growth, messy moments, the doubts, little wins to make it all worth it. See, I believe we don't need to have all the answers. We just need to stay in the game. And keep showing up, keep learning, finding new ways to connect with our family, friends, and ourselves. So, you've been feeling like carrying the weight alone? You're not alone. You're in good company here. So let's dive in. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Today's guest is Jack Cohn, the man you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Jack's not just a business guy. He's someone who packed his life full of lessons, frameworks, and honestly feels like they were made for all of us who are trying to figure this thing out. We're going to talk about some things that hit home for me, the whole idea of demons and dreams. You know the late-night doubts, the little voice in your head that says, you're not good enough. You can't do this. Yeah, we went deep into that. Jack got this way of looking at those fears and flipping them into fuel. What I love about Jack, he doesn't just give theory. He gives real-life stuff that can actually use. We talk about parenting. We talk about career fears. We talked about weight of family expectations and how to break through all the noise. And I'll tell you, there's parts where Jack flips the script on me. Yeah, right. In the middle of the conversation, and honestly, it made me start to think about things that are holding me back too. So sit back, grab a coffee, grab a beverage, and let's roll into the conversation with Jack Cohn next.
Welcome to the podcast, Jack.
Joe, thank you. I'm really excited to be here. It's I hope the actual record podcast is as much fun as the conversations we've had offline.
Well, the question again is about Dark Knight Ventures. With some of the comic book character we really have in common, and I really found that fascinating.
Yeah, again, both of us share this belief that he's a regular guy, right? No superheroes. And for me, I thought about it in the context, really. The metaphor is, here's a man who is blessed with intellectual and economic resources that he uses to create tools to affix to his utility belt to help him have human leverage to be able to help others get home safely. And I thought, what a cool metaphor for a business. And again, for the Freedom Frameworks, appreciate the kind introduction, but these are a collection of tools that I gathered over the last 50 years that I used to give myself human leverage. You know, we all know people who seem to be more blessed than us. They're better athletes, they're smarter, they're more charming, they're better looking, whatever it is. I'm a grinder and I know that about me. And if I could find a hack, what do they call it today? A life hack that would make it easier for me or to give me human leverage. And that's what I've done for the last 50 plus years. And the idea of kind of as a challenge, one of my children gave me to curate these frameworks and try and organize them in a fashion that could help people. That was the purpose of the book. And again, it's consistent with the metaphor for Batman and the name of the firm, Dark Knight Ventures, which is really just an alter ego, pun intended, for me.
All right. One more before we get into the topic with tonight is, which one is your favorite?
Superhero or framework?
The Batman.
Oh, there's no question that Christopher Nolan, Christian Bale were my favorite. I only own a couple of movies in my Apple, you know, I rent everything else, but the trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy by those two. And I confess, I have a collection of Harry Potter movies as well.
Christian Bale is my favorite by far. And I remember Adam West.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one thing I want to talk about tonight is one of the most common demons you see that holding people back in the career or personal life.
God, there's just so many of them, but the one that just jumps out at me is a lot of times resistance shows up for us as a demon. The people closest to us, you talk about your context of parenting. Think about how many times well-intentioned parents, grandparents, uncles, right, who are supposed to be our guideposts about the future as we're growing up, inadvertently taint our confidence based on their demons. This is an interesting, I hadn't thought about this, but I'll share it. In one of the movies that was about Bruce Lee's life, and I think it was called The Dragon, you know, the play being on his movie, Enter the Dragon. Bruce Lee, the character, goes to see his Sufi, his teacher, and asks, why did my father put me in martial arts? And the master said to him, your father was beset by demons. And what your father didn't understand is if the parent doesn't control their demons become their children's demons. And what your father was attempting to do was to give you the martial arts skill set to protect you from demons. And I love that story, but I love it for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which is a relationship with my own father. But if you think about it, the people closest to us tend to have a vested interest in how we are. And when we want to break out and challenge the norm or do something that is different than they expect of us, a lot of people will, good-natured, start to point out the negatives. And almost they don't mean it this way, it's a scare tactic. I remember in my first marriage, my son Jared, who is almost 35 now, comes home from kindergarten and he's so excited about the fact that when he goes to class, he's going to have to present in front of the class. And his mother says, oh my God, you're going to be in front of the whole class. And what if your zipper is open? And what if you forget what you're going to say? And I said, Billy, oh my God, you're scaring me. Why can't you let Jared have his moment? And so I think the most common demon that we have are the doubts our family members have internally about their own insecurities that they package as burdens on us. Don't do this because I'm afraid of that, right? And they never really say that. And that's a tough one because I don't think it's conscious by anyone. I don't think a mother or an uncle is trying to alter your path or get in your way, but this kind of happens. And we see this in work all the time. Is a good employee is moving up the career track, is making progress, and it's a threat to either an associate or a manager above them, and they start to undermine it.
It was definitely interesting too. I can think about that for like in the situation is, you know, you're trying something new, and I'm not sure I'm getting this right. You try something new, and then a grandparent goes, well, that's not for people like us.
Right.
You're not for people like us. But what do you mean, people like us? Sometimes it's almost motivation to prove them wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, and it does drive certain people, but it does create those sleepless nights where you wake up. I don't know about you, but a lot of my demons visit me at between 2 and 4 in the morning. They don't visit me between 2 and 4 in the afternoon.
What kind of demons? Can you define demons more to me?
I talk about this a little bit in the book. I don't know that it's the best example of it, but I think a lot of people, I think as we get older, we suffer from fears of imposter syndrome. What if my child really figures out and don't have the answer? When you're 35, you just lie to the kid. But you're 65, now he says something to you. Oh, what if he really figures out I'm an idiot? I have no idea what I'm doing. We have that in our daily life. We have that in our professional life. We want to show up. We want to be there for people. But when the catalyst for me for writing the book, I almost didn't get started because I started getting in my head, what do I have to say? I really didn't accomplish anything in my life. And why would anyone read anything I had to say? And you start spinning your own doubts. You start spinning, playing off of your own insecurities, your own fears about the imposter syndrome. And the end result of that is it holds us back. We also have demons about fear of change. I'm going to put you in my generation, but I think this older generation grew up with an expectation that there was a career ladder, right? Metaphor, the physical ladder. And I think our kids' generation is going to find their careers are more like a jungle gym. And you're going to go up, you're going to go down, you're going to go sideways, you're going to get off, you're going to walk around, you're going to come back on. And if you don't prepare yourself economically, I'm going to say with some savings, you could have a demon around, I can't change jobs because I can't afford to. If I change jobs and it doesn't work, then what if I lose money? What if I can't rebuild my savings? So these are all smart questions, but they become doubts. They become demons. They become paralysis by analysis that keeps people from reaching out and really trying to meet their aspirations. And I think the trick really is, can you have aspirations and say hello to your demons? Because a lot of them were your guideposts to get you to where you are. And then the flip side of it is, can you make sure that your dreams aren't as fantastical as they were when you were 5 years old and your parents were making sure that you couldn't fall down the stairs?
What I can give an example from me and my end of it is, I don't do solo episodes. I would love to do a solo episode like by myself around an interview. But every time I get to go record that, I hear the voice in my head, you're not good enough. You can't do this. And I don't do it. I get that all the time. And you made me think when you were speaking about that.
Yeah. And there's a great example. That's just a story. Somebody said to me, all events are neutral. The only thing that's positive or negative about those events is the story you choose to tell yourself about the event. So make your stories count. Make them positive. There was a movie with Tom Hanks and Philip Seymour Hoffman called Charlie's War. And there was a scene in it where a guy's talking about an old village in the Middle East where a little boy gets for a birthday gift a pony. And the whole village says, oh my God, isn't Joe lucky? And he gets on the pony and he starts riding and he falls off and he breaks his leg. And the village says, oh my God, poor Joe, he's so unlucky. And just after he's in a cast, the warlord across the river comes and kills all the able men and takes the young children to be warriors, leaving the women behind. And everyone says, oh, isn't Joe lucky? The only thing that was a pure fact is Joe got a horse. And everything else was a story that people made up, a metaphor for their belief system that justifies their thoughts and actions. And demons get in the way of our belief systems and our values that drive our thoughts, that drive our actions.
Oh, you're making me think about something too, in the sense that a belief system, like also about money too. If in the belief systems keeps us in a position, our financial, like financial situations.
Correct. Correct. And it's funny, again, I don't mean to be picking on my first wife, but as it related to money, it was always, I wasn't raised that way. What does that even mean? But I think this young generation, I'm not convinced all of us in our generation are that good, but I think this generation has maybe a unhealthy relationship with money, right? Money isn't really an outcome. If you think about it, it's a tool for other outcomes. And if people, this younger generation in their 20s, like when we were in our 20s and 30s, we wanted to have our first home because it was an asset that we thought could help us grow our net worth. And if you think about trying to have side assets so that you can earn you income so that, God forbid, you don't work or you want to retire, you have income, think about the importance of savings, right? Mm-hmm. If I had 6 months of savings at age 23 instead of buying a car or going on a trip with my buddies or paying for a particular experience, if I was not spending my money on rent, high rent, but I was investing my money in an asset that would grow in value, I would have more freedom. But based on what they heard from their mother or their grandmother or their grandfather or their uncle, I remember distinctly in the 60s, my father, who was a intermediary in the debt space, had a customer that went bankrupt. And he was so frightened by this because was it going to bring his business down because he had made the loan to him? And the life lesson that I got out of this was shit happens economically and an economic cushion is important. But is that why people have money, or do people have money to have a showy car or house so that people think they're more important than somebody else? And again, it's not for me to judge, but it's crazy when you think about wealth today and what somebody's definition of wealth is as opposed to what it was in the 50s or the 60s. By any standard, we live a very good life.
It's also different, too. I think if you change the story, you can change your life in situations like that.
Oh, very much. And one of the ways I think about it is one of the things I talk about in the book is I think it's super important that people recognize that the only thing that the most valuable asset any human being will ever own is themselves and their own earning power. And therefore, I think the key to success in your life is to always be acquiring skills, accumulating experiences, and developing relationships. But that may mean you have to invest in yourself. Maybe you have to spend some money on a course. Maybe you have to spend some money on video audio equipment because you want to do a podcast. Maybe you have to spend some money by taking a different job and work for your idol at a lower compensation because you're investing in yourself to get exposed to that apprenticeship. And people don't really think about that. They think about their money as not a facilitator for their life's aspirations, but something else. And, you know, it is a currency. The question is, what are you applying the currency to?
It's interesting you mentioned investing yourself. Sometimes we think that the newest, greatest technology is going to help us, but in the end of the day, it ends up in the closet or on the bottom shelf collecting dust.
Yeah. But the corollary to it is, I was on Christmas vacation with kids this past Christmas, and I was getting up at 5 a.m. because I concluded that how could I be a professional and not have any PowerPoint skills? So I'm getting up before anyone else is up, and I'm online with a Microsoft Coursera course trying to teach myself PowerPoint skills. My wife thinks I'm totally insane.
It's interesting you mentioned that, too. And investing in yourself too. And I found an inexpensive way. I call YouTube University.
Yes.
I've learned so much from AI to podcasting to it doesn't have to be expensive, but either invest with money or invest with time.
And that's an important thing because you could argue that time with money, but a lot of people don't think about it that way. They say, I don't have the time for something, right? But you're right. If I make the time to go to YouTube University and it doesn't cost me anything, it's just costing my time, then it means maybe I'm spending a little less time on Facebook or I'm spending a little bit less time clicking with the clicker on TV, wasting time or whatever it is people do to distract themselves.
I was interested too about investing in stuff like that. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is we mentioned about demons and dreams. So how do they correlate together? I'm curious.
I think that they're at some level two sides of the same coin. I don't know anyone who doesn't have an aspiration that doesn't also have a fear going along with it. That people would resonate with, but think about the others. Don't we know people who are just overwhelmed by their fears and have lost track of their aspirations? And so I think fears can protect us from getting crazy about our aspirations, and aspirations can lift us out of the paralysis or depression around fear. I give you a really bizarre example, and I hadn't thought about this because I obviously didn't have the question. I have a friend, so I'm a pilot, and I have a friend, I'm out to drinking with him, we're just meeting or having a meal, and he says, oh, yeah, I'm a pilot too. And I said, how did you get into aviation? And he said, oh, that's an interesting question. And he tells the story that when he was a little boy, his father was killed in a plane crash. And the outcome of that is recovering from losing a father is one thing, but it created an incredible fear for him around flying commercially. His father was a pilot, made a mistake, got killed, right? And think about this. This is a kid who now grows up, is well-educated, but has a fear of flying. How does he address the fear of flying? He goes and he takes a flying lesson. And he starts to take this aspiration around aviation. He's a very good pilot, a very accomplished pilot. That aspiration was all it took to begin to lift him out of a lifelong fear of flying.
It was interesting. When you're talking about that for a second, there was a short YouTube short or kind of a TikTok video. I don't remember. But Will Smith was talking. One of the biggest thing in life is just jump. Just take the leap. And it's like, he was talking about going on skydiving with his friends. And then you, on the other side, you overcome your fear because you just take that leap and go and see what happens.
Somebody once told me, and I say it often, fear, F-E-A-R, is false expectations appearing real.
Yes.
And demons are a byproduct of our fears, right? It's the monster in the closet that you're afraid of, and you open the closet door and there is no monster there.
It's definitely interesting too. And about one that I was curious about, you have a lot of strong frameworks in the book and stuff like that, but what one or two that come to mind that really built on relationships and stuff we're talking about tonight?
It depends on somebody's need, right? One of the first frameworks that has been most important to me was just really on time management and the difference between DUE and DO. How many times do you experience a teenager who's procrastinating getting their work done, or a young professional who waits the last minute and then realizes, oh my God, I got to get this for my boss, but I have to talk to these 27 other people before it actually happens, right? So time management was really one of them. I think the other thing that kind of jumps out for me is really how important relationships are in our lives. I know that there's a difference between introverts and extroverts. I'm not really going there. And I know there's a lot of young professionals who just want to show up in a cubicle or work from home and poke at their computer and not deal with people. I'm not critical of them, but I'm really not speaking to them. My favorite thing about the business that I have been in the real estate finance business aren't the transactions. I don't remember all the deals I did. I do remember all the people I did deals with. And I think having a curiosity about other people, where they come from, what their perspective is, why the way they are. I talk about collaboration. I talk about the importance of relationships. I talk about the we, not the me. A lot of times people think they have to get ahead and it becomes in their mind, a zero-sum game. But I don't know anyone who accomplished any level of success or happiness alone. Mm-hmm. I think happiness is best shared. Experiences are best shared to the middle-aged father who's envious of his children who are out playing ball. I remember the times of high school sports. And I can tell you, in high school, our football team was awful, absolutely awful. I think in 4 years, we won one game. I blame the coach. He was an idiot. That aside, you would have thought the Friday night before the game, the Saturday night after the game, that we were all potential Heisman Trophy winners, that we were gonna be NFL athletes. And the reality was it didn't matter. to be able to come to work and be on a team and participate on the we is a really, I find, energizing, I find nourishing thing. And I would rather have group success, familial success in a corporate way, than I would individually. Now, again, anyone who's listening who's a bond trader probably doesn't think that way. To each their own, but those are the ones that kind of jumped. The other thing that a framework that helped me was somebody who told me context gives meaning to content. If we live our lives in the tyranny of the present in our current reality, and we're doing the best job we can to survive. So I ended up leaving my first marriage. I ended up with, at the same time, we raised some money on my business, and I'm trying to do co-parenting. At the same time, I'm trying to grow a business, and which is causing me travel, and I'm going out and coming back. And I don't want to be that dad that's every other weekend. And it was really burdening me. And a consultant that I was using said, context gives meaning to content. Why are you doing what you're doing? And what he helped me realize is Albert Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem at the level it was created. I had all this burden about my responsibility, maybe guilt, about being divorced and having young children, right? But as soon as I could find a higher context for what I was trying to do with my life, call it a purpose, it didn't take, you know, the miles off my credit card, but it made the travel more worthwhile. And so learning to find the intended future that you seek, trying to begin with the end in mind and working backwards, holding a higher purpose or a higher context of why you do something, for me, made it easier to be, you know, we're back to Batman, right? If at work I'm Bruce Batman, but at home I'm Bruce Wayne, how do you manage that alter ego? And how do you keep those two separate and thrive at the same time? And for me, context giving meaning to content was pure freedom accelerant for me.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about that as your context and your why is where I live, where I work. I live an hour away from where I work. I am divorced and I could live closer to work, but less time with my son. So I sacrifice that hour to an hour and a half traffic so I can see my son more. So that's important to me. So the context, and then what you're talking about is, I was thinking about that as you were speaking, that's because it's important.
Yeah. And you made that decision and you own that decision. And for you, probably for everyone listening too, it was the right decision. But the next time you get pissed about the drive to work, all you have to do is remember why you're doing it. And it goes away. Goes away.
Well, it's interesting too. The one thing I wanted to touch base one more thing about is we talked about relationships and how important they were and how they are, not where they are. And it comes back to and the word we. I think it's really important because it's easy, especially in a work environment, to point fingers and if something goes wrong, we're all trying to accomplish a goal. You know, myself is to get parts out on time and service the engineers in the field. And over the years, I've been in a position I've been for quite a long time, maybe 25 years in this month. And but I built those relationships with the area managers and the engineers in the field. So when something goes wrong, they know who to come to. And then we can solve the problem. Or if I need help with something, like a question or if there's an issue, there's not a really hard time. So I really, when you talk about relationships, I'm like, that's what I was trying to explain to my boss the other day, but how important relationships really are.
Well, but also you proved a point that was beaten into me years ago. And that is, look, people don't care how much you know. They know how much you care about them. Like any person could do your job, but when you committed yourself to them and getting their job down, you became their guy. You didn't become that guy because you were bigger, faster, smarter, better looking, bribing them. All you had to do was conveyed to them that they were important to you and you cared about them. And I think too many people are self-absorbed, self-focused. They probably have a demon that they're not aware of, that that grandmother who says that's not, we're not those type of people, who think that there's an us versus them. There is not an us versus them. There is not a victim, oppressed, oppressor. There is only we. And how we can work together is really the answer to the final exam in anything that we do.
That's definitely interesting. And I think that's really important too. But there's one of the couple of questions I wanted to get to tonight, and that was one thing that was really important is, you know, building your dream. We talked, I heard about your vision boards and then dream team, something I remember reading about. And I was curious if you can talk more about that, because I think that's very fascinating.
Well, so I have a different view about that. I'm a big believer in fantasy, not just because we're back to Batman. But I think that people get too focused on a compensation, a job title, a location, a position, whatever it might be. And I find that, and I talk about this in the book, I have a process called intended future. I think that what people should do, and I do this, I also use this as a strategic planning or a problem-solving tool. But if you are trying to be the best you can be, what does that mean for you in terms of a point in time in the future? So I encourage somebody to find a time in the day, a day in the week, where they can be at their fantasy best. And they should close their eyes and envision this intended future. And when you envision it and you open your eyes virtually, look around you. What do you have? Relationship with your children, your grandchildren, a girlfriend on the side, a car, a vacation home, a book, a building named after you. It doesn't matter. I think if people can envision the life they want, not the destination they want, the experience they want, I think it's motivational. I think it's pull energy for them. And they can work backwards to the backside of this framework, which is, okay, now you got to be kind of a hard nose and be critical about your current reality. And if you can be a hard nose about your life today, I have too much debt. I don't have enough fun. I hate my boss. I drive too far from work, whatever it is. And your fantasy about an intended future, what comes in between is a transition plan to bridge the gap. You can see modules. If I decided what my fantasy is to open a scuba diving shop in Portugal, and I realized today that I don't speak any other language, it would be clear that I need to build an action plan to learn Portuguese. I think our lives are very much like that, and we can fulfill our dreams, our aspirations, our fantasies, if we can envision them. You talked about as a vision board, or dream them, or bring a dream team around you to help you answer those questions that are barriers, those answers missing are barriers between your current reality and your intended future.
Well, the question is, are vision board and dream team, is one better than the other? I'm just kind of curious.
No, I think this is all an and conversation. Part of it is the scenario you're in and when you're using it. And also part of it is our own evolution, right? If I'm on a team, it's really hard to get the team to fantasize about their intended future. But the team can collectively paint a vision board. A dream team, in my view, is more a facilitator to help you get to your vision board, because they bring to the table things that can help protect you, can help accelerate you, can help you by saying, hey, no, Joe, that's not going to work. Great idea. I know. It's a great idea because I tried it three times because I thought it was a great idea. And here's what I learned. The answer is do it this way. That's really important to have people you can ask for guidance on. Hey, I am trying to get to a dive shop in Portugal. Will you help me as part of my dream team facilitate that?
Well, I heard that before. There's groups like that. They have for business and for like dad groups and stuff too. I forgot what they're called. They're forums? Groups meet once. Well, and some person's on. What's that?
I refer to them as forums, where you have a forum. You have a group of people committed to a monthly get together and protected through a commitment to confidentiality, and they come in a spirit of trust and vulnerability to share and learn from one another. I'm a big proponent of that stuff.
Also being vulnerable, because that takes a lot too. And what are your thoughts about that?
I think that vulnerability is a good thing. And I think people relate well to people who are sharing their vulnerabilities. It's easier to help somebody that is really intimate about their ask. But that is very important by the leader and manager or whoever it may be to create a sense of safety, right? Think about it as a parent, right? Set aside all the hormonal things that go through growing up and how hard it is and how mean other kids are. Your grandmother who says, we're not those type of people, that's not for us. That's not an environment where little Joey feels comfortable saying, what I really want to be is the second baseman for the Chicago Cubs. And I do think that it's important on the parent, whether that's familial or corporate, to create a safe environment where people can be vulnerable and say what's on their mind. And that only happens if there's no retribution, right? It's funny. My son is 8 years old at the time. I've moved out of the house. My son is very broken and bothered by the divorce. And I come to work one day and I'm working for my dad. And he says, what's wrong? I said, I am really bothered by Jared. He says, what do you mean? I said, Jared told me that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, I'm trying to figure out what I was wrong about. And he says, but I don't understand. Were you wrong about what you did, or was he wrong for calling you on it, or is he wrong about being wrong? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, here's an 8-year-old who's mad at his father, and he felt safe enough to share that emotion. But I grew up in a house that the only one who was allowed to emote was my father, who was a yeller and a screamer, and this wasn't right and that wasn't right. But if you made him uncomfortable, that didn't work. If you challenged him as a father, that didn't work. And so I wasn't going to be vulnerable in front of him. That was like, you know, blood to a shark in the ocean.
It was almost like, I was thinking about that for a second, like a 4,000 feet like observation above. Like when you're talking about, when you're thinking about your son, like flying 4,000 feet and looking down and trying to figure out the problem. Because kids, I noticed my son is 12 now, and since the divorce, I learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
Because I kind of tell him, I don't know everything. I'm not perfect and I make mistakes. But it's interesting to take a minute and step back. And I find that at work too. When there's a problem and it's crazy and I'm banging my head against the wall because I can't figure out this problem and solve it, I tell the person I work with, the senior guy, so the younger guy, so take a minute, we'll come back to this after lunch and take a minute to figure this out. The same thing with my son. I'm like, I'll take a minute and breathe. What is he trying to say?
Right.
What is that? Like, I'm in the book, it talks about the represents battle between demons and dreams, the 4,000 foot perspective or feet.
In my view, go back to your concept of a forum. I don't know a lot of people who have enough self-awareness and enough perspective that they can get to 4,000 feet without somebody else helping them. Because as we said before, dreams and demons, that's mostly in my head, right? So can a colleague, if I'm vulnerable, how can a colleague help me see truth from fiction? And that's why I think, look, if there's anything I learned about running businesses, is absolutely nothing at work works at home, but everything at home works at work. The experience that you have with your child saying, hey, I don't know the answer to this. Let's work through this. Or just holding the environment to be there to share. Thanks for sharing that fear. I can really feel you're angry, and I'm glad you feel safe that you can call me an ass. I have a funny story. My son Wyatt's 4 or 5 years old, and we're sitting, I don't know, my wife and I are doing something, and he's coloring, and I can see he's got a can of Coke right by him. And I said, Wyatt, please be careful of the Coke. Wyatt, please be careful of the Coke. Wyatt, you're going to spill the Coke. And the next thing that happens, Wyatt spills the Coke. So I grab Wyatt and I pick him up and I throw him on the couch. And he looks at me, stares at me, goes upstairs. About 20 minutes later, he comes down and he had drawn a picture. He wanted to show it to me. I said, what's this, Wyatt? He says, Dad, this is a picture of you being a total ass. I said, he started laughing. It's a 5-year-old kid. I took it. I put it on the refrigerator. We taped it on the refrigerator. And that was the reminder that Dad was a total ass. You know, good for him.
It's also nice to hear the perspective of them too, in the sense that, and you're right, I was thinking about that today. I was talking to a colleague at work and about an observation I made at work and about being a parent. And he didn't see it because he's not a parent.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, you don't understand. It's the parent in me that sees something that you don't see it through my filter and my lens. And stuff like that. And you said that, I'm like, oh, I just had a conversation today about that. That's really interesting. Jack, wrapping up, our final thoughts, anything you want to leave about, anything, a framework or something you might want to leave about parenting or demons? You
know, when I was thinking about the podcast and being a dad, I don't know if this is helpful for people, but I decided that as a parent, my context was I was going to manufacture two things, adults and memories. Did I do all the right things? Did I make mistakes? Did I create damage? Oh, I'm certain. But I have 4 children between 30 and 35. I'm very proud of them. They're all independent. They're all self-sufficient. And they're all giving back to society in their own way. So I manufactured adults, and everyone's got a funny story about something dumb their father did. And if long after I'm gone, they're willing to continue those memories, I think I want. That's really what I wanted to do.
It's interesting. Quick thing about that. I mentioned somebody is like, my son's 12. I'm still working on the science project. Hope at the end of my project comes out the right, the other end. That's why I think sometimes parents, it's like a big science project. I do the right thing and hope I don't commit too much damage. And where they connect to find more about you and more about your book?
Very good to ask. Dark Knight Ventures, like Batman, 2Ks, venturesplural.net is my website. And you can learn about me and some of the things I'm doing and blogs that I write, podcasts I've been on. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Jack M. Cohn. And again, I'm interested in other people. If I can't help you, I promise I won't hurt you. And I just really enjoy sharing my journey and being a sidekick to people in their journey. I'd love the opportunity to talk further with anyone who has an interest or a story to share.
Jack, thank you much for being on the podcast tonight. I really do appreciate it. All links will be in the show notes for this episode. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the No Sitting on the Sideline Dad podcast, episode number 154. Hey, I just want to say a big thanks to Jack Cohn for joining me today. I really enjoyed the conversation. Jack shared so many valuable insights about facing our demons, chasing our dreams, and more importantly, how to invest in ourselves and build the life we want. If you want to learn more about Jack and what he's working on, make sure you check out his website, darkknightventures.net. That Dark Knight Ventures, that's with 2Ks.net. Also, all his links will be in the show notes, so if you want to connect them, all links will be there. Now, if you enjoy the conversation, you want to keep the conversation going, just want to reach out and say hi, you can find me over at nosittingonthesideline.com. That's my home base, and that's where you find more about the podcast, resources, and way to get in touch with me. Also, you can find more of the show notes and links at nosittingonthesideline.com/154. Before we go, I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts of this episode. One, like Jack said, fear is just false expectations appearing real. Remember that the next time your mind tries to hold you back. Two, context gives meaning to content. In other words, don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Know your why and the what will follow. As always, my friend, thank you for spending time with me today. And remember, give your kids a hug. Tell them how much you love them. Take care of yourself. God bless. See you.